So when I'm in my personal life, everyone in my personal life knows that I do this for a living. All of my friends know that I do this. My family knows I do this. So therefore, the conversations find me.
It's Dear Jane time. I'm Scott. She's Marcy. Marcy, you would just be shocked to know that there are those who don't want the pro-life message being spread. There are those who are working against people like us in the pro-life space, trying to suppress our podcast, trying to make sure people don't see it, don't hear about it. And there's one huge way you can fight that, Marcy. Ask me what it is.
Tell us, Scott.
If you subscribe, if you hit subscribe or follow, whatever it is on your platform of choice, that helps bump up numbers, that helps manipulate algorithms, all of these things that, you know, I don't fully understand, don't need to understand. Just know that when you subscribe, when you make comments, when you like things, when you share with your friends, all of these fight back against those who would suppress the pro-life voice.
We don't want that. We want to get this out to as many people as possible. I was going to say especially this episode, but really it's every episode. But today's episode is really fun, and I think we'll give people some really practical tips and insights into how to have, I would say, more effective pro-life conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's going to be exciting, and we're going to give you a reference. We're going to show you a link to some fun videos just to give you more ammunition for when you're having these types of conversations. Hey, you know what? Every Thursday we have a new episode that comes out. So make sure you tune in, tell your friends, everybody knows about Dear Jane and the Dear Jane podcast. We also have a new website. Do we talk about this here or not? Jacob, you're going to probably have to edit this part because I don't know if we were going to do the website here or we're doing it later.
Let's just do it.
Okay, so how are we going to
do One more quick thing before we get into today's conversation. We have an exciting announcement to make. Dear Jane officially has a new website where you can go. You can find all of our previous episodes. Sometimes in the episode apps, like Apple Podcasts, after a certain period of time, it like cuts off so you can't go back and find like all the episodes we've ever done. But you can find them on our website. It links to all of those places. It links to all of our social media. It has different resources on there. So talking points, show notes, information about our guests and the conversations we have with them. So go check it out, dearjane.org, and find all of that information there. You can sign up for our email list, which will send out email reminders when we have new episodes drop. That's every week. Hopefully it serves as a great resource for you as you are engaging in really the same types of conversations we're having here with your family and friends.
Probably one of the best conversations we've had in quite some time. It's just a lot of fun. Emily Geiger with the Equal Rights Institute joins us here today on Dear Jane.
Emily, thanks so much for joining us today on Dear Jane.
It is such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Fun story, a coworker of ours sent me a video on Instagram the other day, and he was like, "This is so awesome." And I was like, "We're interviewing her on Dear Jane this week." So I want to just jump in and talk about the social media videos that you create. You kind of play different characters, kind of personifying pro-choice arguments versus logic versus history versus pro-life. And I've noticed you get kind of a mixture of comments. So tell us about your work that you do on social media, how you're changing hearts and minds in that space.
Yeah, well, I got started doing social media with my organization, Equal Rights Institute, about 2.5 years ago now. I've been working for there a little bit longer than that, but I started taking over the accounts 2.5 years ago, at which point we had basically no followers. We had maybe a couple hundred followers on Instagram. We didn't have a TikTok at all. And I said, I think that we can start doing this more effectively by posting video content, because we'd really been only posting kind of visual, just like graphic kind of content, nothing video. So I started to try to make some stuff. And I'll be honest, the first videos I tried to make did not go very well. They did not get very many views because I didn't really know what I was doing. So I just started consuming as much content as I could from other organizations. And I tried to learn what are other pro-life, other conservative, other political organizations doing, but also just what gets views on the internet? What kinds of comedy channels are there on TikTok? What are they doing? How are we creating engaging content that people want to look at? And I said, okay, I see that we need to do a lot of fast cuts. Having a bunch of different characters really helps. Having a lot going on and giving people little short snippets of things to think about, that seems to do really well. I wonder if I can apply that to doing argumentation about abortion, because that's what we do at Equal Rights Institute. Our whole goal as an organization is to train pro-life people how to be more effective and more persuasive when they communicate with pro-choice people. So I specialize the whole rest of my day in pro-life arguments and how to communicate them. So I was like, is there a way I can do that, but in the social media space? And so I started making these dialogue style videos. Really, these days I do two different styles of videos. One time, kind of like every other day-ish, I put out a video that is me playing those multiple characters where we're kind of having this group conversation about abortion between a pro-life person, a pro-choice person, and then yes, usually a couple of characters like logic, science, history, law, those kinds of people that come in and offer different tidbits as we're going back and forth. And then I also make just straight talking to camera videos where we'll talk through different arguments, and that's where I get into more of like my personal story, like the story of my pregnancy and helping people get to know me as a person, because when you're just playing characters, that can sometimes come across weird. And I don't want to be weird. I want people to get to know me too, and then also get to know how I play these characters. So yeah, we get a lot of different kinds of comments. I would say the two main places we post these reels are on Instagram and TikTok. We also post them to Facebook and to YouTube Shorts, but those don't get nearly as many views for really anyone across those platforms. Mm-hmm. TikTok and Instagram are our main. On TikTok, I would say about 80% of our followers and commenters are pro-choice, which is really cool because I get to see a lot of really awesome back and forth happening in the comments as I watch pro-lifers who have seen my previous videos know what arguments to use, and I see them using them back in the comments. It's really fun. And then on Instagram, I would say we're more the other way around. I'd say maybe 75% of our Instagram followers are pro-life and 25% are pro-choice. And so we get, again, a lot of dialogues there, but they're two very different environments. And so I always, when I go read the comments, kind of keep tabs on what's happening, and I use a lot of the pro-choice comments as inspiration for my next day's video. I'll try to take a really thoughtful pro-choice comment or a really intriguing perspective that maybe I haven't touched on in a while and use that to kind of go from there the next day.
We also on our videos, we play sort of roles. There's the really thoughtful, good looking person, and then whatever Marcy roles play. You know, she so that's kind of it's we have some similarities there. So that's cool. So you talked about have you feel like you've changed some hearts and minds?
I know that I have. A number of people have commented saying that I've changed their mind about abortion, usually over a long period of time. They'll say something like, you know, I used to be pro-choice. I've been watching your videos for a couple of years now, or I've been watching them for a couple of months now, and I really have become persuaded to join the pro-life side. I have lots of other people that have DM'd me saying the same thing. Maybe they aren't comfortable putting that out in a comment, but they'll tell me that personally, hey, I wanted to let you know that you've changed my mind. I also see people change their mind on more minor things, which I think is really kind of those stepping stones to getting someone to change their mind fully. Because let's be honest, I don't think most people change their mind based on internet content. Like, that takes a lot of humility to watch a lot of internet videos and then change your mind. Most people change their mind because of personal relationships. They have people in their lives. And I hope that my videos can give them enough curiosity about the pro-life position, help them realize that the pro-life position isn't what they thought it was, that now they're willing to go talk to that pro-life aunt that they have, that they've been refusing to have this conversation with for years and years and years. Seeing them say things to me like, you know, I'm still pro-choice, but I think you're totally right that it's wrong for people to have abortion in the third trimester. That's a win to me. They didn't think that before. Now they watch this video. They've changed their mind a little bit. They've become more open to maybe pro-lifers are reasonable. And now they want to go talk to that pro-life person in their life, or they're willing to the next time that person brings it up to them.
I love that thought of causing people to be curious, because you're right. It's so hard to just like immediately change someone's mind about something. I think sometimes imagery maybe gets the closest to that, or more of the visual side of things. But what are some of the arguments, or are there common like talking points that you've seen that really get pro-choice people thinking about this in a new way?
Yeah. Talking about later abortion is something that I really find is helpful for pro-choice people, because there's very much a kind of idea out in society that later abortion, abortion after viability is usually what we would define as later abortion, that later abortions only happen for serious medical reasons. Either the mother's life or health is at risk, or the fetus's health is at risk and probably isn't going to survive anyways. Like, it's only happening for those very serious reasons. And the reality is that's not true. And pro-choice activists will tell you that's not true. But the problem is average pro-choice people don't know that, because it's a much better narrative. It's a lot easier, especially if you have been pregnant yourself or you've been close to someone who have. Like, I talked about this a lot in my own pregnancy. I was making content constantly during my pregnancy. And I said I had always, like, known logically that later abortion was wrong, just like any kind of abortion is wrong. But now experiencing daily kicks from my own baby, like being able to say, oh my gosh, there seriously is a living human inside of me. I am experiencing that personally. It made the idea of abortion after viability just so much more horrifying to me, because I'm like, why is it? How has our society failed so much that there is out there women like me who are experiencing the same feelings I'm experiencing and then are choosing to get an abortion? And the reality is, as I said, pro-choice activists will tell you. So I'll talk about the work of Diana Greene Foster and Katrina Kimport, who are both famous pro-choice activists. They do research out of the University of California, San Francisco, and they are specifically interested in understanding women who get later abortion. And they've done a number of studies. There's one in 2014 and another one in 2021 that found that there is no statistically significant difference between the reason a woman has an abortion early or late in pregnancy. So the same exact proportions of for health reasons, the same exact proportions of for financial reasons or for relationship reasons. It's the same from early to late. And I do think abortion is wrong no matter what. But a lot of people, pro-choice people, are like, wait, it's not okay to be having an abortion that late for reasons that aren't, like, your life is at risk. That's something that we can have common ground on. So I'll talk about their research. I'll also talk about, we have data from the state of Arizona. They did a huge, like, study they do every year, basically trying to understand the abortions that happen in that state. It's one of the very few states that actually record their abortion data. And if you look at the data over a 5-year period, you find that 80% of abortions performed after 21 weeks of pregnancy are on perfectly healthy women carrying perfectly healthy fetuses. Like, that is crazy. And when I tell pro-choice people that, they are universally horrified. They're like, this is not what we want. And I said, great, cool. We have common ground there. So I see that as a really big stepping stone to getting pro-choice people to start kind of breaking down the narrative they've been told, the thoughts that kind of our society has told them that this never happens. That can really start the conversation.
I like how you, I mean, I could see how they, the reasonable pro-choice people would say, yeah, that's terrible. Too often, though, it just seems like their response is, that doesn't happen. You know, that's not true. Their late-term abortions don't happen, that sort of thing. It's just getting over that hurdle, I think, seems to be a good one, which leads me to the question, and I wrote down something you said, thoughtful pro-choice comments. Any stick out that you can think of that mean recently that's like, yeah, that's really thought-provoking that you've heard other people say and provide feedback on your channel?
Yeah, I think this is a pretty common, popular one. There's a lot of pro-choice people that are starting to move in this direction. And every time I see it, I get a little bit excited because I'm like, this is a good pro-choice argument. And by good, I don't mean that it, like, wins. I don't mean that it's better than the pro-life arguments, but I mean, it's actually thoughtful and, like, there's something to it. And that's anytime I hear a pro-choice person talking about the idea of bodily autonomy. Because I think that pro-life people oftentimes discount the importance of bodily autonomy. Like, pro-choice people will bring up the idea that, for example, kidney donation is not required in the United States. If you were dying of kidney failure, Scott, and I was the only person in the whole wide world who was capable of donating my kidney to you, it'd be really nice if I did. I would be a good person if I did. But I shouldn't be legally forced to. Like, the government cannot chain me to the bed and say, you have to give your kidney to Scott. And so, therefore, doesn't it make sense that I, as a woman, shouldn't be forced to donate my organs, to donate my uterus, which is an organ like my kidney, to this other person inside of me who wants to use it? See, that pro-choice argument assumes that pro-lifers are right, that fetuses are people, and says, just like I shouldn't have to donate my organs to Scott, I shouldn't have to donate my organs to this baby inside of me. I think that's a really thoughtful argument. There are problems with it. We can totally talk about those. I talk about them all the time on my channel. I make a million bodily autonomy videos. But every time I see that, I'm like, yes, thank you for acknowledging that the unborn is a human that does have rights like us. This is a better kind of pro-choice argument because it accepts those things. And then we can address this idea of bodily autonomy.
I love that kind of thoughtful. Let's have a thoughtful conversation about it, yeah. Right? Let's not start hurling names. Let's not be in denial about what was really happening. You know, that just seems, I'm glad to hear that that's happening because it just seems like that's happening less and less in our world.
Yeah. I think that our world has oftentimes forgotten how to have good conversations about things. That's exactly right. And I want to fix that.
Yeah. What are some, I know a lot of times there are logical fallacies associated with pro-choice arguments. Sometimes it's just, they're not accurately informed about the issue. But I know one of the things that can keep pro-life people from speaking and engaging in the topic is they feel stuck. Like they'll hear an argument. Maybe they'll hear an argument like that about bodily autonomy and think, oh my gosh, I've never thought about that before. Like, should a woman have to use her organs to support the life of another, like an unborn human being? What are some tools or tips that you have for people, pro-life people, that they can kind of keep in their back pocket to help identify either flaws in arguments or just things that they can bring up to spark that curiosity in people?
Yeah. So a couple of things. A, you can, and I think should, spend at least a little bit of time in your life. Follow a couple of accounts like mine. I'm not the only person out there making pro-life apologetics content. Like, follow a couple of accounts. Just start hearing these kinds of arguments. Because even if you are presented with an argument you've never heard before, if you have heard pro-life apologetics at all, it starts to give you some tools that of things that you could bring up. So, A, try to educate yourself at least a little bit in your own time. Start to get exposed to what pro-life arguments are. B, I think it is perfectly okay to say I don't know to a pro-choice person. I actually think that people find it very, very, like, they find, like, relief from that in a conversation. Like, it takes away some of the tension. Like, a pro-choice person is, like, in this combative mode, and if you immediately come back with combative things, I will say something like, you know, that's a really good point. I've never thought about that so much before. Okay, let me take a second. Let me think this through. And then I'll try to come up with something to say to respond. But just giving that honesty, it like completely takes them off guard because they're expecting me to come back in fight mode. And every time I do that, I've done that in-person conversations before. I've trained my students to do that. And always the pro-choice person calms for a second, doesn't start coming right back in, and like gives them some space to think about it. And try to point out a thing that you think is different. Maybe it's not the core difference. Maybe you don't know exactly how to respond, but you could try to say something like, I don't know, I feel like maybe this isn't really the core reason, but I do feel like there's something different about abortion when it's like your own child inside of your body. That feels different than me giving my kidney to Scott. I don't really know how to articulate that, but I don't know. There's just something about it that's not quite persuasive to me. What do you think? Like, try to point out one reason you're not quite there. Or you could say, you know, I don't really know. I've never thought about that before. But my friend so-and-so, and in this case, you might have an actual friend so-and-so who thought about this before, or your friend so-and-so might be me. You could be like, I follow this really cool girl on Instagram that I know talks about this a lot. I wonder if she has a video on your arguments. I think that's really good. And if she doesn't, I'm going to DM her right now and I'll ask her to make a video about it because I feel like she would have better thoughts about this than I have. Honestly, I've just never heard that one before. And then pull out your phone. I promise you I have a video on this. And you can go through and look at our index and do it. We also at ERI publish an abortion debate index where we go through every single kind of pro-choice argument. I'm not kidding. We've talked to thousands and thousands of pro-choice people. I have all of them. And they're categorized and you can find any argument and be instantly linked to our materials and how to respond. So you can do things like that. Like say, let's look this up together because I think that's a really good point. And if you're right, that matters. That's my last piece of advice, is to let pro-choice people know I am taking what you're saying seriously. Because if you're right about this argument, I should change my mind and become pro-choice. This is important. I tell pro-choice students all the time when I give speeches, no matter who is right, this is a big deal. Like, if pro-lifers are right, that's maybe a little bit more obvious to us as pro-lifers. If pro-lifers are right, that means that there are innocent human beings being legally killed in our country every single day. That is a major problem. But if pro-choice people are right, that means there are millions of people like me out there trying to make a procedure that's equivalent to getting a mole removed illegal. Something that women really, really need in order to be able to get ahead in life. We are taking away their freedom. Like, it's a big deal if pro-choice people are actually right. So if this argument they've presented to me, I don't know exactly how to respond. I do think that I have an obligation to try to figure it out. And I want to let the pro-choice person know that. I think this is serious. I want to find the answer. Let's try to find the answer together. Because if you're right, I really should change my mind and become pro-choice, because this is a big deal.
So I want to ask both of you. So we're talking about how to have these conversations. I'm curious. So all three of us live this every day, right? We're in the pro-life world. I mean, do you guys seek these conversations? To what degree do you seek these conversations out in your personal life when you're away from work? I mean, we're talking about how to have these conversations, but like in real life, for lack of a better term, Emily, let's start with you. I mean, do you like try to start these conversations? Do they just find you? I mean, what are you doing when you're away from your professional role? I'm just curious.
Well, that's a little bit hard because I'm kind of always in my professional role. I go and travel giving speeches on abortion. I go to college campuses and I set up tables where I talk to pro-choice students. I've got a big sign on the table that just says, should abortion remain legal in the U.S.? And students come up to me and tell me their opinion and I start conversations. This is literally what I do and what I train people how to do. So when I'm in my personal life, everyone in my personal life knows that I do this for a living. All of my friends know that I do this. My family knows I do this. So therefore, the conversations find me. I have friends, I have family that call me and ask questions about, hey, I heard about this news story. What's going on? Can you help me figure this out? Because I make it so public that I am pro-life and that I want to have these conversations that people therefore are comfortable coming to me doing that. So honestly, for me, it's not that hard to get into the conversations, but I'm also weird. I acknowledge that because I just talk to pro-choice people for a living. Like, me making videos is a very small part of what I do. I do that for like an hour a day. The rest of my time, I am spending directly engaging with pro-choice people. And so that's just what I do.
Marcy, what about you? Because I got to be honest. I don't seek out. I'm just thinking about, you know, when you're out with friends on a weekend or something like that. Mm-hmm. Not only do I not seek out these conversations, I have to be honest, I try to avoid them if I'm honest. What about you?
Yeah, I think it depends. Probably to a lesser extent than you, Emily, but everybody in my life knows that I'm pro-life and they know that I've been engaged in pro-life politics in Colorado. So a lot of my friends seek me out for my opinion on like abortion policies that are being brought up in Colorado, for example. But I will say I engage somewhat on social media. Like, if I post something and then people are kind of coming at me, maybe it's friends from high school that maybe we have different opinions now, or a lot of the conversations I have maybe are with friends who I would say are like mostly pro-life or want to be fully pro-life, but they have hangups. So they come to me asking those questions. And then outside of that, I would say it depends on the time and day. Like, sometimes people ask me where I work and I, you know, talk about my pro-life work and stuff that I do. And other times I give a little bit more generic answer if I'm like tired or maybe not wanting to get into it. But one of the things that's challenged me, and I think, you know, we've had Monica Snyder on this show before. I know, Emily, you know Monica, and I love what she says about when someone, you're out in public, you're, you know, in a grocery store line or whatever, and someone makes a comment that assumes everyone has this pro-choice belief, it makes you feel uncomfortable. But why should you be the only one who feels uncomfortable? You should state your opinion and your belief to the contrary and invite other people into that discomfort, and you might have a really great conversation that flows. So I've tried to do that a little bit more and just kind of have that mindset of like, it's okay and it's probably good that there's some discomfort.
That all right, maybe. So you two make me, a guy like me, feel guilty. You mentioned like social media. I try to stay away from it. But Emily, I'm going to make an assertion and see if you agree. With kind of holding back and laying low, I'm in the pro-life majority compared to you two. What do you think about that?
Oh, I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah.
I think Monica's advice needs to be taken by more people. It's one of my favorite things Monica ever told me, by the way, and I have stolen it and told it to many other pro-lifers, because yes, we need to be more confident in those spaces. Even to just say a sentence like, you know, I don't really want to argue about it right now, but for the record, I don't agree. You don't have to get into the debate. If you're in the, have the energy to get into the debate, go for it. But if you're in the grocery store line and you can just make them a little uncomfortable, just break that bubble so they're no longer thinking everyone here is pro-choice. Make them reckon with the fact that some people in the world actually are pro-life. That alone, I think, does good. And that's something I think everyone can have a little more courage to do, even if you're not super versed in what to say. Just say, for the record, I don't agree. And move on.
Yeah. I think that's good. We've talked about this a little bit. What would you say some of the biggest pro-choice arguments are that really trip up pro-life people? Like, let's say you've got someone who's 100% pro-life, but they're not used to engaging in the debate or the conversation. They hear a pro-choice argument and they're like, oh my gosh, I've never thought about that before. What are two or three of those arguments, and maybe kind of help break those down for people?
Sure. So I think the first one is that bodily autonomy argument we talked about before. I think most pro-life people feel very equipped to talk about the fetus, to talk about the baby. Why is this a human? Why does it have value? Most pro-lifers maybe could use some improvement on exactly what words to say or whatever, but they have a pretty good idea because that's why they're pro-life. They are pro-life because they believe this is a baby. They don't know what to do. As soon as the pro-choice person is willing to agree, at least for the sake of argument, some pro-choice people actually do believe this really is a human. Some pro-choice people are willing to just accept that for the sake of argument and say, all right, fine, let's assume you're right that it's a human. You still shouldn't be forced to donate your organs to someone else. As soon as a pro-choice person is willing to assume that, most pro-life people kind of panic. They're like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to make this debate without talking about the baby. So the really big, like, easiest way to talk about that kind of organ donation argument, and I go into it in much more detail on my channel, so if you want to kind of get into the weeds, but the simplest disanalogy to understand is that when we're talking about organ donation, we are talking about rescuing someone from death. We're talking about Scott dying of kidney failure and me having the right to essentially do nothing. It's the right to not give my kidney to him, to not save him from it. It's really sad that he's going to die, but I have a right to do that. What I don't have the right to do is grab a gun and just shoot Scott right now. Like, I don't have a right to kill Scott. And that seems to be pretty universal. Everybody agrees with that. And the problem is not all of those options. Like, I technically have the option to kill Scott, even though it would be an illegal option. I have the option literally to kill Scott. And I also have the option to refuse to donate my kidney to Scott. Both of those exist. Problem is, you don't always have those options. So I'll give you another analogy that I often use to help pro-choice people see why organ donations not the same as pregnancy. Let's imagine for a second that Scott wins the lottery and gets himself a giant yacht.
So far, I like this analogy better than your other one. My kidney problems.
You don't have to die in this one, Scott. Yeah, okay. So you get a giant yacht. It has all the fun things on it that you want. And as you would do if you had just gotten a giant yacht, right? You just decide to take it out into the middle of the ocean one Saturday afternoon all by yourself. You're going to like work on your tan. It's going to be so peaceful. Like, life is good. All right. Scott out there on his yacht. We're loving it. When he's out there though, he discovers that there is actually a preschooler on his yacht. So back up, this preschooler had been playing hide and go seek on the docks with the preschooler's siblings and had gone onto a stranger's boat and hid in the closet and then promptly fell asleep. You discover this when you're already miles away from shore. I think you only have two options, Scott. I think you can either help by allowing that preschooler to continue to exist on your boat till you take the boat back to shore, which you were already doing anyways. You allow the toddler to get off and like done. No longer your responsibility. Or hypothetically,
chuck it overboard.
Chuck it overboard. Bingo. You technically have that option. But is that a legal option?
I was being a smart aleck, but yeah, it's actually the other option. Yeah,
it is. That is the only other option. Yeah. You can either passively help. You allow it to exist, which is essentially helping it, but it's passively doing so. You are doing nothing. Or you chuck the preschooler overboard, which is killing it. In that case, in that very specific case, when your only options are to help someone or to kill someone, killing is the thing you can't do. Mm-hmm. You cannot kill. We all agree with that. You essentially have to help the preschooler. And I think that is much more like pregnancy. Because in pregnancy, there is no, I just refuse to help you option. We do not have Star Trek beam technology by which you could just like beam this fetus out of the woman's uterus and into this artificial womb so she doesn't have to be pregnant anymore and the fetus would be fine. We don't have that technology. So your only options are to help or kill. If you passively do nothing, the baby survives. Whereas in organ donation, if I passively do nothing, you die. There is a very big difference there where I have the right to refuse to help someone, generally speaking. That's true. But I don't have the right to kill someone else. And that's what's happening in an abortion. That's the really big difference there.
What's a common trap that pro-lifers usually fall into when they start to engage in a discussion or debate?
Any discussion or debate on abortion, not specifically bodily autonomy?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just when you see pro-lifers start the conversation or a debate, what's some common traps we fall into?
Ooh, okay. So I would say that pro-lifers fall into two different kinds of traps. The trap number one would be misunderstanding the pro-choice person. So I'll go into that in a second. And trap number two would be not taking the time to make this a more productive conversation than it probably is when they start it. So let me go category number one really quick is the idea of misunderstanding the pro-choice person. So I think a lot of times pro-life people don't understand bodily autonomy arguments like the one we just talked about. They hear pro-choice people say things like women have the right to choose what to do with their bodies, and they interpret that as you don't think that the unborn is a valuable human who has its own body. Where oftentimes the pro-choice person is saying, no, women don't have to force someone else. They don't have to like donate their organs to someone else, or they get the right to make choices. So pro-life people will misunderstand pro-choice people and then start talking about like the biology of the unborn, which while true and awesome is not going to be persuasive to this pro-choice person because you missed it. You missed what they were trying to say. And so a lot of pro-life people don't take the time to ask questions, to really listen to the words around what the pro-choice person is saying and try to understand if the pro-choice person's maybe making a smarter argument than you thought. There are very dumb pro-choice arguments out there. Okay, I see them. But in my experience, pro-choice people are typically making smarter arguments than we give them credit for, at least a pretty big percentage of the time. And so don't just assume that they must be ignorant about biology. That's a really big trap of why we aren't being more persuasive, because we're missing the smarter thing they're saying. And then they're getting frustrated internally that you're not getting them. And then we just talk past each other and the conversation's over. They walk away annoyed. And you're like, why didn't they change their mind? And it's because you missed the point. And then category number two is you don't take the time to make this a more productive conversation. Like, for example, when I hear pro-lifers respond to the question of rape, the question of what should we do if a woman is pregnant because of rape, pro-life people are very tempted to immediately start talking about the baby and the fact this is not the baby's fault that the baby got into this situation. And that is true. But the problem is if you immediately start talking about the baby, what the pro-choice person hears is you don't care about the woman. And so what's going to happen is they're already probably pretty mad if they're coming into this conversation immediately asking you about rape. They are not in a great mental place. You are immediately going to start talking about the baby and not acknowledging the trauma that the woman has been through. That is only going to make them angrier and more frustrated. And we are just going to escalate this to probably a screaming match and then them walking away. I've seen this happen many times. Instead, we need to take the time to de-escalate this conversation by doing things like pointing out common ground with things the pro-choice person has just said. Taking real, genuine, I am talking like a paragraph or more time to acknowledge how horrible rape is and that our society does not handle it well. And I think the same thing is true, by the way, for other topics that aren't as emotionally wrought as rape is. Like that's true when a pro-choice person comes up and talk about poverty. Pro-life people often want to jump straight into being like, well, that's not a good reason to kill a baby, instead of being like, yeah, poverty is a really big issue in our country today. And here's some thoughts that I have about that. Here's some experience that I've had volunteering at a food pantry and like how I really noticed through that how complicated poverty is and how hard it is for people to break out of it. Like take some time to show them you are a real person who doesn't have what I call fetus tunnel vision. That's a phrase that our organization coined about the idea that pro-lifers often come across like the only thing they care about in the world is fetuses. Like they have this fetus tunnel vision. And if you take the time to point out common ground, but other things, to show that you are a person who cares about people, that's why you're pro-life. Then this conversation becomes much more productive because they start to calm down and realize that you are this well-rounded person who also happens to be pro-life, not this person whose only agenda is talking about fetuses, because that comes across as really weird. And so I think that's a big trap that pro-life people fall into. They don't know how to do anything other than just talk about fetuses. They're like, if I don't talk about the fetus right now, then I'm going to lose this person. I'm like, no. Take the time. Calm the conversation down. Acknowledge their concerns. And then you can go talk about fetuses. But take a hot few seconds to get this to a more productive place where they see you as another person.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so important. I love that you highlighted just having empathy, hearing really what they're saying and not jumping to conclude. Like, I think sometimes we so quickly categorize, like, oh, that's this type of argument, so I'm going to respond without actually responding to what they say.
Yeah.
And I think the other important thing you mentioned is I think it's good for pro-life people to understand that in many ways women are victims, whether that's victims to the sexual revolution and all the ideas that came along with that, or victims to the deception of the abortion industry. Women have been deceived into thinking certain things about abortion. And I think also remembering that a lot of the people we talk to, there's a very real possibility that they've had an abortion. So just having that empathetic mindset, and obviously we need to have the empathy and compassion for the unborn child, but remembering that the woman is a part of this too. And so, acknowledging that, I think, is important.
Scott, you looked like you just said something.
Jacob will have to edit that out because, yes, I had muted myself, but then, all right, Jacob, we'll pause here. So what I hear us saying is you can equip yourself with great talking points, equal rights, and all these different places, but what I hear you saying, Emily, is don't just jump into your talking points as soon as you hear somebody say, okay, wait a second, I've got my I've got my responses ready to go. It's just not that simple.
No, it's not. The way that you see me behave in an internet video is entirely to get views on that internet video, not because that's how I actually talk about abortion with real people. When I go out onto college campuses and talk to pro-choice people all day long, what I am doing there is listening to them and loving them and helping them see me as a well-rounded person, and then presenting a cool pro-life argument that makes them think, and then they respond to it, and then I bring up another piece of common ground, and then I point out why I disagree. And it's this back and forth, really productive, respectful conversation, not me like slamming down different talking points in a literally like 45 second internet video. Very, very different things. So learn your arguments, yes, but be a person in this conversation and help them be a person too. Help them get off of the scary like fight mode that they might be in when they come in, and really just turn this into a space where we can talk. It's okay.
Yeah. I love that. I love all of the tips that you've shared, the insight you've shared from your experience talking with pro-choice people and working with pro-life people. If anyone listening is wanting to follow along, maybe go check out the videos you've referenced and see what other work you have online, where can they do that?
So Equal Rights Institute is the name of the organization that I work for. So you can just search Equal Rights Institute on any of your social media platforms and you will find us. You can also go to our website, equalrightsinstitute.com, and it's got links to all those places along with links to our online courses. So we do provide apologetics courses if you really want to very kind of in-depth analysis of how do I understand pro-choice arguments? How do I respond to things? We have got the Equipped for Life course, which is meant for adults. And we also have Equipped for Life Academy, which is a high school curriculum teaching pro-life high school kids how to think about these arguments, how to engage with their peers, etc. So those are all available, all links just straight from our website. We also have a huge blog where we break down arguments if you're a reader, if you don't want to watch internet videos, or if you want a more in-depth analysis of something than the 45 seconds in the video, but you don't want to go all the way to taking a course, that blog is kind of in the middle for you, where you can search, look through our abortion debate index, which is also linked on there to be able to find answers to any specific question you're looking for or any specific topic. All that, equalrightsinstitute.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the work you do, and thanks for spending some time with us today on Dear Jane.
Of course, it was such a pleasure.